One of the joys of being in a place for 25 years is things sometimes come full circle on you. Those who were kids when you came, you're privileged to baptize them and perform their wedding ceremony, and then they start having kids. Well, when Nathan Zavala was just a little boy, it was his practice to come to me after I preached, and he would say, "Good job." And I'm privileged to tell him tonight, "Good job, brother. Well done." Aren't we blessed? And let us be thankful. I want to invite your attention tonight to the third chapter of the book of Daniel. It will be an account that will be familiar to you in Daniel, the third chapter. Daniel, remember, was a prophet of the Babylonian captivity. He was taken along with the royal family in the very first deportation of the people of Judah into Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar. And in chapter 1, we read how he and his three friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, were promoted through the ranks of government as Nebuchadnezzar tried to assimilate them into Babylonian culture. And that allowed Daniel to interpret the dream of the king, where he saw the vision of the statue with different levels, and said, "You, king, are the head of gold, Babylon." And perhaps that explains why in Daniel chapter 3 that Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, the height of which was 60 cubits, that's 90 feet, and its width 6 cubits, 9 feet, and set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent word to assemble the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the rulers of the province to come to the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the satraps, prefects, governors, counselors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the rulers of the provinces were assembled for the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And the herald loudly proclaimed, "To you the command is given, O peoples, nations, and men of every language, that at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, and all kinds of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire." Therefore, at that time, when all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, and all kinds of music, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. I like to call the beginning of this passage the Chaldean version of the State of the Union address, because they had all the branches of government assembled for this grand dedication. And Nebuchadnezzar had built this statue likely in his own honor. Since he was the head of gold, why not make a whole statue of gold? And he set it up where it could be seen throughout the kingdom, and further ordered that when his royal orchestra played the music, that was the cue that every citizen of his kingdom was to bow down and worship this golden image that he had set up. And those who did not were not to stand trial. They weren't to plea bargain. They were immediately to be cast into a furnace of blazing fire. And so that sets the stage for how are the people of God going to respond in this fiery trial. I suppose that the New Testament book, which most closely resembles the book of Daniel, is 1 Peter. Because it too is written to a people in exile. That's how Peter begins his epistle. Now, your version might have the word stranger or pilgrim or alien. But all of those deal with somebody who's living in a foreign land temporarily. And that's what had become of the Jews in the first century. It was called the diaspora, or the dispersion among the Gentiles, just like in the days of Daniel. They were exiled. And so Peter writes so that you will know how to behave among the Gentiles. Keep your behavior excellent. And at the end of the book, in 1 Peter 5, he even refers to where he is, though he is in Rome, he refers to it as Babylon. But I want you to notice especially, if you'll keep your place here in Daniel 3, but look at 1 Peter chapter 1, of how Peter begins this epistle and talks about the things that were happening to the people of God. 1 Peter 1. I want to start reading at verse 6. In this salvation spoken of in the last verse, in this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and honor and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And though you have not seen him, you love him. And though you do not see him now, you believe in him and greatly rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, obtaining as the outcome of your faith the salvation of your souls. Did you notice that Peter said the things that they were experiencing as exiles, distress, suffering, persecution, he said was being tested by fire? Your faith is being tested. You're going through a fiery trial. And while the New American Standard uses the word outcome, there's a note in the margin that says that's the word genuine. We speak of pure gold. That's gold that has been tested by fire, melted at 1500 degrees Fahrenheit. Do you know what that's compared to? Me neither, but I wouldn't want to touch it. 1500 degrees. Glenn Bowman will tell us afterwards how hot that is. But what happens when you melt gold at such a heat is all the impurities rise to the top, and then you scoop those off. And you take that pure gold and then you pour it into the mold of a bar or jewelry. But that gold would not be purified without the fire. And so I want you to think about a purified faith tonight. A purified faith that comes through testing. You see, when we're the ones going through fire, we often pray, Lord, take away the trial. Perhaps we ought to pray, Lord, increase our faith. so that it will be genuine, purified, tested by fire. A purified faith is a faith that is tested. And we see that in three ways for the three Hebrews in Daniel 3. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Let's return to their story in Daniel 3. Lord, increase my faith. Number one, no matter the consequences, there are going to be consequences for what we believe in. Just like there were consequences in Daniel 3. Now remember that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego knew the law of Moses. A law that said, you shall not worship any other god. You don't bow down to them. You don't serve idols. And so there was a conflict here. Are we going to fear the king? Are we going to fear God? And the consequence of not fearing the king, remember, was to be cast into an oven and to die a fiery death. What will be their response? The reason that torture is sometimes used on prisoners is because the thinking is that everybody has a breaking point. If you're trying to get information out of them and they say, I won't give it, well, we'll see. How far are you willing to go and stand on your convictions? Well, Nebuchadnezzar is using the threat of death to beat his kingdom into submission. You either bow down to this image or be burned to death. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had a faith no matter the consequences. We continue reading in verse 8. Now, for this reason, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and brought charges against the Jews. And they responded and said to Nebuchadnezzar the king, O king, live forever. You yourself, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music, is to fall down and worship the golden image. But whoever does not fall down and worship the image shall be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. Now there are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image you have set up. Now, to be fair, these men are not concerned about the integrity of the king or the honor of their kingdom. They're motivated by jealousy because these foreigners who've been brought in from Judah are being appointed into positions over us. And now we're having to answer to them. And because they're not bowing down, king, are you going to follow the law and have them executed? Well, what are they going to do? How are they going to respond? Are they going to respond by the consequence? Or are they going to pray, Lord, increase our faith? I want you to remember, these boys are away from home. They were youths in chapter 1. 14 to 20 maybe. We don't know how much time has passed here in chapter 3, but they're not very old. They're living in a land full of people who don't honor Jehovah God. Most likely, as was the custom of this time, if you were going to serve in the king's court, if you were male, you were emasculated to give full concentration to your service to the crown. And they could have very easily thought, where's God? What's He care about us? But their position was, we will not bow down or serve the golden image you have set up. We too are living in a world that's not our home. We're exiles. We're here temporarily. And we're going to face trials where there are great consequences to our choices. And depending on which way we go, we're going to have to answer for that. Are we going to pray, Lord, take away the trial. This is too hard. Are we going to pray, Lord, increase our faith. Give us a faith in You no matter the consequences, so that our faith may be purified. Lord, increase our faith, number two, no matter the circumstances. No matter the circumstances. Let's pick up the reading now in verse 13. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and these men were brought before the king. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up?" Now, I at least want to give credit to the king here. He gave them the opportunity to set the record straight. Here's what I've heard. Now you tell me, is this true? The king liked these boys. They'd gone through the training process in chapter 1, and they were found to be better than the men of Babylon. And so the king had favor toward them. And don't you know, that would have been another pressure for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. This king has been good to us. But they feared God more than they revered the king. Is it true? Maybe you didn't understand. Maybe this command was lost in translation. Now, verse 15, if you are ready, at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music, fall down and worship the image that I have made, very well. I'll give you another chance. But if you will not worship, you will immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. And what God is there who can deliver you out of my hands? When we first meet these three Hebrew boys, they have different names than what's here in chapter 3. When taken in captivity in chapter 1, their names are Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, along with Daniel. So just like other Bible names, their names had meaning. And each one of them had a name with the name of God in it. For instance, El is short for Elohim. Iah is short for Jehovah or Yahweh. And so Daniel, Mishael, Hananiah, Azariah, their names were about the God they served. And so the first thing Nebuchadnezzar did said, we're going to change your names. Daniel became Belteshazzar. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, thought to have been names of the Chaldean gods. But I want you to see that by changing their names and changing their circumstances, it did not change their faith. They could have said, well, you know, we're still young. We can serve God and do good things here in Babylon if we stay alive. And our influence can help our people in captivity. I remember the first time we took our family to Disney World, and David was a little boy, and we were going through all the rides and trying to find ones that everybody would like. And there was one he was real excited to do. He really wanted to do it. And we got up there, and of course it said, you must be this tall to ride. And a line right there. So I didn't get to ride it either. But anyway. Sometimes we think of serving God that way. You must be this old to make a difference. You must be this old or this level of maturity to matter. The faith of these three Hebrew boys made a believer out of a king who said, what God is there who can deliver you out of my hand? Lord, increase our faith that no matter the circumstances, we will stand for what is right. They could have said, well, we'll just fake it. We'll bow down, but we won't worship. We'll go through the motions. If anybody asks, I'll say, oh, I was just tying my sandal. We will not worship or bow down to your image. Is God only God here at the church building? Is that the only time we have to be holy and do what's right? Is God God on social media? Are we just allowed to say whatever we want to say and watch whatever we want to watch? Take away the trial? Oh, Lord, increase our faith that no matter the circumstances, we will stand for you. Does your trial give you an excuse for how you talk to your children or treat your spouse or your brethren? Lord, increase our faith. Give us a purified faith no matter the circumstances. And then number three, no matter the outcome, how will this trial end up? Because that might determine how faithful I am. Look at verse 16. Remember, he's just asked, what God is there who can deliver you out of my hand? O king, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire. How did they know that? How did they know that their God was able? Well, they knew about how he had drowned the armies of Pharaoh when Israel crossed the Red Sea coming out of Egyptian slavery. They knew how God had led them into the land of Canaan and conquered nations that were stronger than them and won battles they had no business winning. They knew that God, through one angel, just one angel, killed 185,000 Assyrians. And so, yes, our God is able to deliver us from this trial. He's shown that in the past, and He has that power now. But even if He does not, verse 18, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image you have set up. There are some people in the Bible that had an assurance of God in their back pocket when they went through a trial or they went through a test. Joshua was told when he became the leader of Israel, God said, everywhere you put your foot in the land, I've already given it to you. Gideon was told he was taking 300 men to fight 185,000. God's already given you the victory. Paul, when he went on his journey, was told, take courage. You're going to make it and witness at Rome. But I want you to understand, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego hadn't read the end of Daniel 3. They were not given the assurance by God, go stand before the king and nothing's going to happen to you. I'm taking care of you. You won't be harmed. They didn't have that. And their faith was not based on that. Yes, our God is able, but even if He lets us burn to a crisp, we will not bow down or worship the golden image you have set up. Folks, there are people who leave the Lord because of the outcome of their trials. They prayed fervently and prayed and didn't get the answer that they wanted, and their faith crumbled. Take away the trial? No, Lord, increase our faith. Give us the strength to endure. No matter what the outcome is, you are God. You have the power to do something, but if you choose not to, we will serve you no matter the outcome. Lord, increase our faith. Well, Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, ordered that the furnace of fire be heated up 7 times hotter than normal. And he had Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego tied up, and when they were thrown into the furnace, it was so hot that the soldiers carrying out the order perished on the spot. But the king looked down into the furnace and saw not 3 but 4 men walking around in it. And he brought them out, and there wasn't even an eyebrow hair singed. There wasn't even the smell of smoke on their clothes. In verse 28, Nebuchadnezzar responded and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent His angel and delivered His servants who put their trust in Him, violating the king's command and yielding up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or tongue that speaks anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses reduced to a rubbish heap, inasmuch as there is no other God who is able to deliver in this way. And the king caused Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to prosper in the province of Babylon. Well, what if they had prayed, Lord, take away the trial. Don't let us go through this. This is too difficult. Then the leader of the world, the most powerful man on the planet at this time, would not have gone from what God is there who can deliver you to there is no God who can deliver like the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's why we pray, Lord, increase our faith. It results in a purified faith for us, and then a behavior before the Gentiles in exile that they too may glorify God in the day of visitation. And I've often wondered, when the Hebrew writer goes through all of those great heroes, men and women of faith in the Old Testament, who did great things in spite of trials, tests, persecutions, that he runs out of time and said, there are others who quenched the power of fire. In Hebrews 11 and verse 34, I just wonder if he had Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in mind. The next time you're distressed by various trials, don't pray, Lord, take this away. Pray, Lord, increase my faith. That it will be genuine, perfected, purified in your sight. Because there's a consequence to a faith that crumbles, and that's the fires of hell. The place where Jesus said, the worm does not die, and the fire is never quenched. Perhaps tonight you're in danger of facing an eternal destiny away from the presence of the Lord and the glory of His might. We want to encourage you to do something about that tonight, to see the salvation that comes through the King of Kings, to those who are called and chosen and faithful to Him, who in spite of a world around us that does not honor God, says, I will believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. I will obey Him and submit to His terms of pardon to have my sins washed away. And I will be faithful to Him and surround myself with fellow believers who want to make heaven their home. This song's been selected. We're going to sing it now, where you can make that decision known right now while we stand up and while we